Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Guest voiceover artists today, Luca, age 7, and Cara, age 5. And that's from Ethna, presuming their mum or guardian or big sister, I don't know. But thanks very much to Luca and Cara. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? 5 on 5, 5 on, ray at rte.ie. The winners of this year's Eurovision Song Contest, the Kalush Orchestra from Ukraine with Stefania. That's a telenka there. I looked it up. It's a type of whistle, telenka, a traditional woodwind instrument. I don't know if it's traditional exclusively to Ukraine or to Eastern Europe, but it's called a telenka. And well done to them. And it was brilliant. And it was the public vote, as you well know by now. Over 400 they got from the public vote. And it means that people all over Europe, through their votes for the Eurovision Song Contest, show their solidarity with Ukraine. And it was just one little thing that people could do, and they did it, which is great. We spoke to Timur last week. Timur is Ukraine's Marty Whelan. He was doing what Marty does from a bunker. And just a little bit, I'll play it in its totality, but just a little bit of his reaction to the Ukrainian win.
Важливо зараз для нас, друзі, не стримуйте емоцій. Хочете плакати, плачте. Хочете стрибати, стрибайте. Ось цей момент.
Which is, he'll translate for us. And they've translated the lyrics from the song on a video, which just is available as in from yesterday. And they've put it to sort of war pictures. There's female soldiers carrying babies through war-torn suburbs of Kiev, and it's very moving. Anyway, what I didn't know, because a lot of rap guys are into, you know, it's the lyrics are less than palatable, but the lyrics to that tune are about the lead guy's, August is his name, his relationship with his mother and his love for his mother. Which you wouldn't know by listening because you don't speak Ukrainian, but there it is. And we were speaking to Timur later on about that and other things. We spoke to Carrie Crowley and Catherine Clinch last week. They're the stars of On Colleen Kuhn, which was released to cinemas here and in the UK over the weekend. And I see it got rave reviews in The Observer. And Mark Mode, who's he's known as a pretty tough critic. It's hard to impress him. And he said of On Colleen Kuhn, "Rush out and see it." So this, all of this augurs well for the Oscars. Are we allowed to say that now? Like, could On Colleen Kuhn get a foreign language Oscar? Well, definitely by the reaction it's got so far, I would say yes. And they haven't dared to think about that, I would imagine. The people involved, but well done again to them, and highly recommended from here. Loads of sport on over the weekend. Kildare meet Dublin in the Leinster football final. Go on the Lily Whites! It could be our year, or maybe not. And that the Leinster football final is happening on Saturday 28th, 2 weeks' time, as is the Munster football final, Kerry versus Limerick. The Heineken Champions Cup final, and Leinster are in there against La Rochelle, and they'll be playing out that old rivalry between Johnny Sexton and Ronan O'Gara. Remember that Heineken Cup game back in Croke Park in 2009, and Gordon Darcy went over in the corner, and then Johnny Sexton, who was the new kid on the block at the time, and Ronan O'Gara, who was the old guard. Ronan playing for Munster, Johnny playing for Leinster, and there was a bit of tension there. That's euphemistically saying what happened on the day, but there was, and they're going to carry that through now because Ronan O'Gara is the coach of La Rochelle, and Leinster will be playing La Rochelle. Is it in Marseille? Because they got rid of Toulouse over the weekend, 40-17, Leinster beat Toulouse. And the Champions League final, and loads of Liverpool fans here, so Liverpool take on Real Madrid. It looks like that the quadruple is beyond their reach now, not because of anything they're doing, but because of what Manchester City are doing. And it looks like they're going to win the Premier League, but we'll see what happens there. Still on sport, Graeme Clifford has been on to us just to let us know that the Sanctuary Run 2022 is happening on Sunday the 19th of June. Athletics Ireland, Trocra UNHCR Ireland and Strava. It's a 5K event and it'll be held in the cross-country track out at the Sport Ireland campus, Dublin 15. And it'll be celebrating people across Ireland, regardless of nationality, legal status, culture, religion, gender, sexual orientation. Amongst those taking part will be asylum seekers, refugees from across Ireland, plus Irish people and migrants to Ireland who are not seeking international protection. That'd be a nice event to be involved in. So I might get involved in that. The Sanctuary Run 2022, Sunday, June 19th. Did you see that picture? Everyone's talking about it. I'd say the picture on the cover of The Independent. If you haven't seen it and nobody's mentioned it to you, go out and get it. It's by Fran Veal. And it's a picture of a razorbill seabird. But if you've seen Happy Feet, you know, the one about the penguins, and then there's the other penguins that are smaller and tougher. They're sort of the gangster penguins. This guy looks like that, but he's for real. He's sort of doing that thing that rappers do with their two hands, but he's doing it with his wings. All right, yo. Razorbill seabird arrives on the cliffs of Ireland's Eye off the North Dublin coast, where it breeds each year, and the photos by Fran Veal on the cover of The Independent today. ray@rte.ie for emails, and you may want to get involved in our chat today with Sean O'Neill. And Sean is from Transport Infrastructure Ireland, TII. And he'll be telling us about his role as Director of Corporate Communications and answering your questions, and that's the important bit, about Ireland's roads, our cycling paths, our train network, all of that. Sean will have the answers to. What are the plans for the future? How are they going to make cycling more attractive to people in Ireland? That's a big question, because it's only in the last 2 weeks that Transport Infrastructure Ireland were made responsible for cycle lanes and cycle paths, or whatever you call them, around the country. So we'll be talking to Sean about that. We'll be also speaking to him about traffic, and is it up to pre-pandemic levels, and anything else that comes to mind. So Sean O'Neill of Transport Infrastructure Ireland will be here. If you want to ask him a question, make a comment or whatever, ray@rte.ie, ray@rte.ie. And Emma sent us in an email to that address. She says, you might remember... everyone was talking about the fact that Apple were going to discontinue the iPod last week. Well, Emma was on. She says, Ray and team, was wondering if you or the listeners could help me. I have an iPod that is not working and trying to get it fixed is near impossible. Just before COVID, it started to act up. When I took it to a shop that deals with Apple products, they looked at me with disbelief as if they had not seen one before. And well, if they're of a certain age, they may not have. And I might as well have brought a dinosaur into the shop on a lead. That'd be spectacular, Emma. During COVID and lockdown, we weren't going to the gym, getting out that much beyond the 2K and then the 5K home radio. So I wasn't using my iPod as much as I would. Then when I got COVID last year, I wasn't able to exercise due to complications. But I'm back. I'm back exercising this month and I really miss my iPod. But now I hear that Apple is winding down on the Apple iPod. So this might be my last chance to find someone to fix it. I love the simplicity of listening to music without being on the phone or the distractions of the phone, i.e. messages and all that. If anyone knows who or how to get this iPod back up and running, I would really appreciate it. Thanks in advance, Emma. Hold on to it. It could be a museum piece very shortly. I was trying to remember the first time I had my hands on an iPod. It'd be like, it's definitely 17 years ago. Is it 17 years ago? I remember bringing one home. It was my mate's, and I hooked it up to the hi-fi system to compare the quality of the music to the quality of the music on a CD. So I had David Bowie's Life on Mars on the iPod, David Bowie's Life on Mars on the CD. And to my human ear, the two were indistinguishable. So I was thinking, wow, this thing is going to take off. Yeah, this thing is going to take off. Anyway, any help for Emma there on the iPod? She wants to get it fixed. Is it not a heavy old yoke? Remember the iPod Nano? Now, that was, I used to look at that. It's the size of a postage stamp. And you could have 1,000 songs on it. I used to marvel at that. Just sit back and say, wow. I'm easily impressed. I'm easily impressed. Do you remember this? Here's a blast in the past. That made somebody 300 million, over 300 million euro back in the day, 2005. That was when polyphonic ringtones were all the go. And the reason we're talking about them is Ali Fox put it up on Twitter. She said, back in 2003, I spent €18 on ringtones. 2022, phone's been on silent for 12 years. How things change. You see, I was lucky, and I'm sure a lot of you were, that I was of a certain age that the ringtones didn't appeal to me. I was too old for them. And I probably have to explain them to a younger age group as well. But for people, I'd say, what, in their, what, 30s, they remember them. And just under a couple of blasts from the past. My word. Good luck. For fans of Harry Potter. For fans of Titanic. For fans of MC Hammer. You could get them and you paid for them. You paid anything. You don't hear that many of those personalised ringtones anymore. There is somebody in our office who has Depeche Mode on there. And then there's another person with some heavy metal tune. But most people have their phones on silent, which I don't know. I don't know. What happened? What happened? We don't want people knowing our business. Is that it? But what if you're away from your desk? How will you ever know that somebody's ringing you? I'm just looking at the True Tone. And they were the people who allowed somebody, for example, to put up Depeche Mode as their ringtone. They were estimated to be worth $6.8 billion back in 2010 because of what they were doing. Anyway, the advent of purchasing ringtone seemed to simultaneously end in 2007 with the launch of the iPhone, which allowed users to create a ringtone from a song in their iTunes. Other phone manufacturers followed suit. And that was the end of the millions to be made from the little crazy frog. I think back in the day I had that, and I also had the sound of a rifle firing, and then, you know, put the two together, and then the poor frog was no more. Poor ex-frog. 51551 ray@rte.ie. I will tell you about our quiz in a moment. But first, some music on this Monday afternoon. Good afternoon.
White lips, pale face, breathing in snowflakes, burnt lungs. Our taste. Lights gone, days end, struggling to pay rent, long nights, strange men. They say she's in the class 18, stuck in her daydream, been this way since 18, but lately her face seems slowly sinking, wasting. To us, 'cause we're just under the upper hand. I'm going mad for a couple grams, and she don't wanna go outside tonight. And in a pipe, she flies to the motherland or sells love to another man. It's too cold outside for angels to fly. Just under the upper hand, I'm going mad for a couple grand. class 18, stuck in her daydream. Been this way since 18, but lately her face seems slowly sinking, wasting, crumbling like pastries. They scream the worst things in life come free to us, and we're all under the upper hand. Go mad for a couple grams, and we don't wanna go outside tonight. In the pipe, fly to the motherland, or sell off to another man. It's too cold outside for angels to fly.
Day team from 11 years ago, ladies and gentlemen, 11 years ago. Talking about the iPod, I'm 59 and I couldn't get over that there was music coming out of this little square thing. And no moving parts, unbelievable. This is Liam from Ballinteer. We should meet up, Liam, and marvel at new technology. Two of us sitting back looking at things working. Sony has a range of digital Walkmans that are as good, if not better, than iPods, says James in Limerick. I was just looking at them there, and you can get one from around €82, and they go right up to €300 for the top end. Hello on iPods. My son modifies old iPods. See Washington Post article last week titled "The iPod is Dead." My son was quoted by the reporter on modifications that can be done. If you like, Emma can have the details. Sorted. Avril in County Cork. Thank you so much. And thank your son in advance for Emma from us, if all that makes sense. Back in about 2003, I bought a book in Easons that gave you the ability to program in specific ringtones into your Nokia. Is it called 3310? Yeah. I made a fortune in providing people the A-Team theme tune for €1 pop, says Rob in Dublin. That's the other A-Team, as in, you know, a crime they didn't. Yeah, that one. Where this one? Here's the one, yeah. Which one is that? I don't know what that is. It just name that tune. Name that tune. Norman Medcalf. Here we go. Norman. Name that tune in one. Thank you. I thought I was getting Star Wars, and I got something completely different. Computer says whatever. Right, better tell you about our quiz today. There you go. Ringing in the Ears, looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and answer three questions each on clips they will hear in their ears. That's what we call a Ringing in the Ears, bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we have a different prize every day this week, just for a little bit of variety. Today, it's a two-night stay at the Tullamore Court Hotel in one of their comfortable and spacious bedrooms with dinner on one evening in the Brasserie. The hotel is located in the heart of Ireland and has beautiful bedrooms, incredible food, a 20-metre pool, not to mention a fun-filled kids' club and award-winning service, making it the perfect destination for a couple's break or for all the family. And you can find out more, tullamorecourthotel.ie. And you can explore Ireland's hidden heartlands while you're there, play a game of golf in one of Offaly's top-class courses, or simply enjoy a pre-dinner tipple at the welcoming Furlong Bar. That's our prize today. Thanks very much to the people at the Tullamore Court Hotel. Here is your qualifying question. Who won the Eurovision on Saturday night? Who won the Eurovision Song Contest on Saturday night? And the number to ring, 0818 715 925. 0818 715 925. And good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, Ukraine were crowned the winners of the Eurovision Song Contest. There's the answer to the question. On Saturday night from Turin, following the public vote, there was a stark contrast from the glitz and glamour of the song contest in Turin, counterpointed by a man in a bunker who was willing his country to victory. That man is Timur Morozhnichenko. He's Ukraine's Marty Whelan, just to, you know, to give you a reference point. And he's on the line, ready to speak to us now. How are you, Timur?
Hi, thank you, fine.
Yes, before we chat, we're going to have a listen to your reaction to your country winning the Eurovision at Saturday's final in Turin. Have you listened back to this?
Yeah, sure. A lot of times.
Okay. A lot of times. Okay. Here's Tamer. Listen to it. This could be when they got the over 400 points, or it could be when they were announced the winner. I'm not too sure because we don't speak your language. But let's play it in. Here we go.
Україна переможець Євробачення 2022! Україна! Як же це важливо зараз для нас, друзі, не стримуйте емоцій. Хочете плакати, плачте. Хочете стрибати, стрибайте. Ось цей момент.
A lot of emotion there. What were you saying, Timur?
I suggest, of course, Ukraine. I think you understood that.
Yes.
And after that, I said that this is a very important moment. And if you want to cry, you have to cry. If you want to jump, you can jump. Do everything you want because we need these emotions to explode out from us, blow up our hearts. You know, just to understand, you know.
Yes.
From 24th of February, all of Ukrainians have so many different emotions, and all of them pretty negative, you know. Mm. And at that moment, when we saw that all Europe stand with us, all Europe supports us, it's very important for us, you know, just to understand that we are not alone in this war.
Yes. And you were there, and it is stark, the contrast between the glitz and the glamour and the high tech of the stadium in Turin, and you in a bunker with a couple of laptop monitors in front of you. That's a big contrast. And what has been the reaction generally in Ukraine to the win? Because it seems a little bit small, you know, compared to what's going on, or maybe I'm mistaken.
No, it's a real national party right now, but without party, of course, because we don't have an opportunity to celebrate it. We have a lot to do.
Yes.
So, you know, on social media, on TV, everywhere, you know, right now, people just talking about this moment and singing Stefania song. You know, even the train between Kyiv and Ivano-Frankivsk, it's the region where Kalush city is situated. Even this train now departs from the central station with the song Stefania.
Right. Okay. And tell us a little bit about Kalush Orchestra. And the song is about a mother, isn't it? Stefania is a mother.
Yeah, yeah. Mother of Oleg, the leader and founder of the Kalush band.
Yeah, and it's
actually he has a birthday today.
Oh, does he? Right. Well,
yeah,
what a way to celebrate your birthday. But he's gone back to the front line now, is he? He's gone back into Ukraine from Italy.
Maybe not to front line, but
no.
To Ukraine, of course. Yeah.
Okay. Because
thanks to armed forces of Ukraine, the front line, for example, from Kalush city is about 800 kilometers away. From Kyiv, it's 500-600 kilometers
okay.
away.
Right. And tell us a little bit about him. And I was watching the national final, your national final, and his mother was there in the audience, and they took a shot of her. It's an ode to his mother. It's showing his appreciation for what she has done for him.
You know, this song was like a surprise for his mother because she didn't hear it before that moment.
Right.
So on national final, it was like dedication, of course, to her. And with this song, he just wanted to ask her mother to forgive him that he was a bad boy earlier. Now he's much better.
Yes, yes. He's better behaved. Yeah. And I was saying, maybe I got it wrong, but the whistle in the middle, is that Telenka? Is that what it's called? Telenka? No. The whistle that's played, you know.
I think you might even better know than me.
Okay, right. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, yeah. So it was a lovely break from what's happening there, and a sliver of light, I suppose, for the people of Ukraine. How did you celebrate yourself, Timur?
Oh, our celebration was pretty interesting because just 5 minutes after the grand final, Mr. Putin decided to congratulate us with in his favorite way. He launched missiles to Ukraine. The massive air raid alert was all over Ukraine. And we've been in the bunker till 6 a.m. Because six or eight missiles striked and hit it, the region we've been working from.
And do you think, Timur, that was a coincidence or not?
Hard to say. It's hard to say. There are no logic decision in the from that side, so it's hard to say.
Hard to say. Yes,
but next day, we saw some bombs from Russian side with the signs. Carlos, you've asked about help to Azov. You've got it.
Right. So they had written on the bombs about Kalush.
Yeah.
Right, so maybe it wasn't a coincidence. Now here's something, and like it's the Eurovision taking on huge importance because that win, and now, as everybody knows, the country that win hosted the next year. Dare we think about May 2023 and what the situation might be like in your country?
You know, this morning I've had a small talk with the Minister of Culture of Ukraine, Oleksandr Tkachenko, and he said, Eurovision Song Contest 2023 will be in Ukraine. And that's it.
Right.
So right now...
Yeah, that's defiant, isn't it? That's saying it.
Yeah. You know, we have a couple of months before the final decision where to host Eurovision next year. And we strongly believe in our armed forces of Ukraine.
Yes. And what would it be, Kiev? Because Kiev has hosted before. I was there, actually. And somebody mentioned Mariupol.
Oh, Mariupol is impossible, of course, but the city is completely destroyed, completely.
Right. Okay.
It'll take, I don't know, 4 or 5 years at least to rebuild it, fully rebuild. Mm. So, of course, President Zelensky has written on his Instagram that someday we will definitely welcome all the people to Eurovision in Mariupol.
Aha, but someday, not next year.
Someday, not next year.
Okay.
You know, I think that big cities of Ukraine are absolutely ready to meet millions of fans, of course, but the biggest one, I mean, Kyiv, Odessa, Lviv, maybe Kharkiv, Dnipro, but of course not Mariupol for this time.
Timur Morozhniченко, thanks so much. It was great to see you celebrate with such emotion on Saturday.
Hey, before you let me go, I want to say once again, thank you so much for this wonderful support. Now, we really know that we are not alone in this war. We know that we have a lot of brothers and sisters all over Europe, and it's give us a huge power. We will definitely win. Thank you.
Just because I've been struggling with, what people say at the end then, is a power to Ukraine. How do you say that in your language?
It's better to say Slava Ukraini.
Say again?
Glory to Ukraine. Yes. Slava Ukraini.
Slava Ukrainia. Slava Ukrainia. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Timur. Mind yourself. Stay safe. Bye now.
Thank you. Right. Yeah, see you next year.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551, The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Sean O'Neill is the Director of Corporate Communications for Transport Infrastructure Ireland, TII. We asked Sean to join us and answer some of your questions as we noticed that traffic seems to be well back to pre-pandemic levels. It certainly feels that way. I think you'll agree. We'll be talking to Sean about that and he'll be here to answer questions on other stuff, roads, Lewis, cycling lanes. So get them into us, ray@rte.ie. Sean's going to be with us from now until 4 o'clock. Welcome, Sean. You're very welcome.
Great, thanks for having me. Thanks very much.
Now, congratulations, is it, that you've only recently took on the responsibility for cycle lanes?
Yes, relatively recently. It was brought to the minister asked us to take on sort of the coordination of the cycle network, and it's going to be called the NCN, the National Cycle Network. And it really is to take all the disparate parts and coordinating, bringing them all together.
Uh-huh.
So that's our that's a request by the minister.
Who was responsible before you?
Local authorities.
Okay.
A lot of local authorities. We work in conjunction and very closely with local authorities because of the National Road Network. So we have a lot of close established relationships with all the engineers, the women and men who work there, and deal with all the landowners and all the issues regarding developing road infrastructure. So we're going to apply that same sort of acumen
to cycle lanes.
Cycle lanes, yeah.
And what about greenways? Are they under your control as well?
The greenways are predominantly local authority, and it's to interconnect with those. That's really the job.
Right.
And I think that's where the sort of the National Cycleway Network is going to take all those pieces of the puzzle and bring it together.
Mm. Because last year we were curious as to what way the greenways were going and what the big plan was. And we tried to find somebody in charge and we couldn't.
Yeah, it's a bit of alphabet soup. I think for your listeners.
Alphabet soup.
Yeah. Well, I think for your listeners, like you have the Department of Transport, which is the overarching government body and the Minister of Transport in charge. Then underneath that, you have the National Transport Authority, the NTA, which is responsible for public transport initiatives and especially within greater urban environments. So we all know the NTA. And then you have the RSA, which is the Road Safety Authority. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you have us, TII, and we build things. We're the women and men engineers and finance and expertise and road safety and engineering and environmental. We build things. And we build roads with the local authorities and also the Lewis. The Lewis network is our responsibility.
And now
you'd
be building cycle lanes.
And now cycle lanes. So that's the sort of alphabet soup of everything, but that's really how it works. So ultimately, we work in partnership with the National Transport Authority on public transport initiatives, and we work with the RSA on making the road safer, and the local authorities in particular to building things.
Right.
Okay.
So there's hope then for the future because there will be shared knowledge. My understanding of, say, greenways, for example, there was a local group, say, over in Ackle, which was the first one.
Yep.
They put it together. Yep. Then there was a little group down in Waterford. A lot of them just historians, local enthusiasts.
Absolutely correct.
Yeah. So, and there was no shared, there didn't seem to be any shared knowledge or anything like that.
I think it's great. It's great that such acumen has been built up at the local level and people are willing to take on such things at the local level. And that's an Irish thing,
you know,
and it's a wonderful thing. And we should be applauded for doing it as communities around the country. And now,
but it's nice to have a national plan.
Oh, it is, yeah. It is. To bring it all together, it's going to be important, but it's going to take a long time, Ray. I mean, we've got funding for 77 projects alone this year. The Minister Ryan has appropriated funding for that. We are going to be building out about 900 kilometres of cycleway in all in the overall plan to connect up with all the other greenways and blueways, and in total it's 3,500 kilometres. So we're going to be a long way to do it.
I don't know what the future of Eamon Ryan is, but he may not be Minister for Transport forever. He's from the Green Party and they have particular interest in cycling.
Yes.
You know, what I'm saying is when he's gone and somebody else is in, a car driver person, will things change? Or
I don't think so, because I think sustainability and the future of giving people options is really what this is about.
Okay.
You want a menu of like what I do. I drive and then I park my car and I hop on a train to go into Dublin. In the future, you know, maybe I could, well, you know, some people will be able to cycle to a local town or village, hop, lock their bike up or, you know, do that and then hop on a bus and go to Kilkenny if you live outside of Kilkenny.
Okay.
That's sort of the plan. And it's all part of this whole sustainability change socially and culturally that we all have to go through, you know. And I grew up in a car, you know, I grew up in Boston and the car was king. So
And with the cycle lanes, it's a bit like, what was your man's name, the winning field or the something field, what was that? Build It and They Will Come.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly.
What's the name of the film?
Yeah.
They're not even paying attention.
Build it and they will come. Yeah. I think that's the logic with the cycleway network. And, you know, if you're a, you know, if you live and reside in rural Ireland and there's an option for you to go into the town and grab some messages and do some jobs, you know, why not do that? Three, 4 kilometres, no big deal.
Well, let's get the stats then. Just the thing that piqued our interest in talking to you was wondering if traffic was back to pre-pandemic levels. Is it?
Yes and no. Okay, so yes, in certain zones, like the M50 in particular sections, absolutely it is. And it's about, in some areas, we're down about 5% on pre-pandemic levels. But here's the interesting thing, and the experts in this area have informed me and educated me to it. There's an elongation now of the traffic levels. So what that means in English is that the local peak in the morning, 7 to 9 in the morning, or 3 to 7 in the evening, is now stretched out. So people are really noticing that. And it's kind of a twofold issue. One is the fact that people are taking different trips. They're not all going into the office. The other is that, you know, there's a lot of great commercial activity. You know, we were looking at the numbers and HGVs and, you know, the commercial van, that sort of thing. They're almost half of the traffic on the M50 now.
Wow.
So that's a good sign for our economy.
It'd be interesting to even know how many delivery vans there are compared to 5 years ago because...
Because of what people are doing.
I live in a small cul-de-sac and I work and I'm looking out the window and every day there's a van up there.
Whereas delivering.
5 years ago, it was a big thing to see a DHL van.
Yeah, it was a big deal, you know. And I think now it's what happens. And there has been that huge shift because of COVID.
So the number of people working from home, that hasn't made an impact on the traffic numbers then?
I would say, well, because the traffic numbers, we're not in certain locations along the M50 corridor, we're not above 2019, but it's the fact that people are taking other trips. So maybe going to check in on their mothers or their fathers or going to drop the children off, because the M50 is a regional corridor to get you to other places. That's ideally what it's for. And it's busy. It's very, very busy. And that's why we have the demand management system and the variable signage system on it. It's now in place from Ballymun all the way to the Red Cow.
So that tells you how long it is to the next junction.
And slowing you down if there's an incident on the motorway. Yeah. And you know, there was, just to give some of the numbers here, there were 1,335 accidents and incidents on the M50 in 2021, of which 475 were accidents. So that's one a day.
Right.
And that can cause huge backups on the M50. And that frustrates people. And
of course it does.
We have good response times. We have good emergency management. You know, the Gardaí, the fire, the ambulance, they all show up. And that's why this signage system slows you down so they can get with
the job. And speaking at the highest level, are people happy with the road system around our capital city? Because there was that big work out on the N7 to expand it to what was it, four lanes or
three lanes each direction. You're right, to make it motorway all the way down to Nace.
And
to the M9, really, the M9 split.
Is that sufficient?
That's worked really well.
Yeah.
If you think about the old, the Red Cow, we upgraded that. And if you kind of follow that logic, it was Newlands Flyover, did that.
Yes.
And then we go down to Nace Road widening all the way to the M9. And that allows the traffic to dissipate. So it has worked and people are happy with it. Are you?
Yes. I don't use it that often, but I mainly cycle, not down that road, I do cycle.
Good.
Okay, so that's traffic then around Dublin. What about countrywide? Is it similar patterns, is it?
Yes.
Patterns.
Similar patterns. Cork, Galway, again, traffic levels are up, commercial activities up. We're doing a big job in Dunkettle. The Dunkettle interchange in Cork is being upgraded to be very similar to the Red Cow, free flow predominantly.
No lights. Yeah.
And let's get people in and out of the system as quickly as possible.
Was that a uniquely Irish thing, traffic lights on a roundabout?
You know what? No, it wasn't. It has happened. And I felt very powerful at times because I remember going up there. I was doing, I think, a thing with you. I was calling in and I hit the cross. You know, you could literally hit a traffic light button, you know, to stop the traffic.
Right.
And sure, all the traffic stopped around the country. It was a very powerful position to be in.
Not anymore.
Yeah,
right. Okay, public transport, because Eamon Ryan and everybody, well, we'd all like to see more people using public transport.
Sure.
Is that happening?
Yes. Obviously, we have, we're responsible, working with the National Transport Authority, we're responsible for delivering Lewis expansion, along with a big project that everyone knows of, Metrolink. That would be a significant undertaking for the country and a very good thing
to see
happen.
Where is that at now?
That's in the planning stage, the business case is with government, and that's really where it is. So we're waiting to get approval on that.
And that will do what?
What that will do is basically build a metropolitan subway system from downtown Dublin, sort of Stephen's Green area, all the way to the airport.
Right.
It's a big undertaking. So we will
see.
And
is Dublin big enough to require that?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think there's challenges there regarding what the priorities are for the Lewis as well. But we can do both. And one is going to take a lot longer. The Metrolink project is going to take a lot longer.
How long are we talking?
Oh, you know, I've dug up a city in my previous life in Boston. You're
on your own.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a long, long time. It's going to be a long time.
Well, so. Give us an idea.
No, I don't want to get into any trouble. But let me put it this way.
I'm talking decades.
No, not decades. Maybe I'd say the better part of eight years, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, it's a serious gig.
That's after it gets the go-ahead, which it hasn't got yet.
Well, it all in, what people need to, your listeners, even doing a road project, all in, time-wise, it's 8 to 15 years.
Right.
That's how long it takes. And so you're about 8 years, 4 to 5 years.
Planning.
Planning, procurement, CPOing land, doing the whole process. And then construction's like 3 years. You know what I mean? So right. In a roads program, 3 to 4 years.
So say that's the metro then. Let's go down to Cork to Limerick, the M20.
Okay, the M20 is currently...
Where is that at?
That's currently going through the planning process. We've identified the preferred option, which is an integrated transport solution, which in English means we'll have, from inception, we'll be incorporating public transport elements as well.
So it'll be bus lane?
Bus lanes, park and ride facilities, right. Cycle lanes, so you can cycle if you'd like, Ray. And, you know, separate, obviously, from the road option. But that's really what's going to be happening now.
And it's where good. Is that in the 8 to 15-year cycle?
Well, we're about a quarter to halfway in that cycle. So I would say all going well, you're starting that project in the year 2027.
Starting it,
yeah. But then it would take you approximately three years.
So we're 8 years away from completion.
Yeah, all because the process is the process. Well, the process is the process, and I think what people may not be aware of, procurement, for example, or the
you mentioned CPOs there.
Yes, yes, a CPO, absolutely. That is
compulsory purchase order.
Compulsory purchase order, which is obviously a very serious thing to do when you're purchasing someone's land or farm or house.
And that's been brought up in the Dáil, hasn't it? That Eamon Ryan were promised that there will be no CPOs in certain parts of the route.
That's absolutely the wish and the desire. You want to come to a negotiated position with landowners that is fair and equitable for not only the landowner and homeowner, but for the taxpayer as well. And the greater good is what's answered here, because that corridor, for example, is one of the most dangerous in the country. And 40% of that corridor doesn't even have a hard shoulder. The loss of life on that corridor is significant. So it is very important for people to realize that connecting up not only from a safety perspective, but from a greater economic counterbalance to Dublin, you can go from Cork to Limerick to Galway.
To Galway, yeah.
All motorway in the future once that's done.
Yeah.
And it'll be safe.
So CPO is the last resort.
It's the last resort. Ideally, you want to come to a negotiated position with landowners, but sometimes you can't.
Right. Of course, CPO is in the news now, isn't it, with the National Maternity Hospital.
That's right, yeah.
Now, we said you were coming in. So let's see what people want to ask you. Can you ask, Sean, would a Limerick to Kerr to Waterford to Rosslare motorway not be a better idea than Limerick to Cork? Is there any plan to bypass Castle Martyr and Killa in East Cork? Have you been down that way? They're major bottlenecks, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And they're not mutually exclusive. You don't have to do one or the other. You can do both. And there is public consultation going on right now on the N24, which is that corridor. But we do, like, outside, there's a lot of significant investment have gone into the roads over the last 15, 20 years. Mm. And it's transformed the country, Ray. You know, and you've met me because of that.
Oh, yeah, no, but sure, like every time I drive down the N7 and I remember, like, you know, there would have been the Red Cow, then Newlands Cross, then Rathcoole,
yep.
Then Naas, then Newbridge, then Kildare, then Monaster Evan, then Portlaoise.
It's
a different world. It's a different planet by comparison.
Absolutely. Yeah. We still have work to do then interconnecting those. Because a lot of those older roads, those older national roads, like the N20, it's literally people are crossing cattle on it in the middle of the evening and in the morning. So it's still back in time and it's dangerous.
Yes.
So that's what we have to do as a country. And seeing those, you know, smaller to mid-size bends getting removed and doing safety schemes around the country with the local authorities, because that's who we do our work with. And that's going to be the next stage. And that's what we're doing.
So what was the answer to Paul's question then? Is there any plans to bypass Castle Martyr and Killa?
Not right now. Authority is going to be working out, though, I'm aware of. Yep.
Could you please ask Sean O'Neill, Transport for Ireland, about the current status of the Atlantic Corridor Motorway project? Which one is that now?
Well, the Atlantic Corridor was actually from, technically, from Cork all the way up to Sligo.
Right.
So the N20 could be part of that. And then you're going all the way up to Galway, as we said. And then if you look at...
Limerick is linked to Galway, isn't it? Mainly motorway.
Yeah, motorway. And then you have, well, the N4 Clooney Castle Ball, when we opened up last year, in August last year, Taoiseach was there. Yeah. It was a great, great event. Again, another dangerous stretch of road that has been improved to make it much safer. The next one is the N5 Westport to Turlock, ongoing. And the N4 Ballyhadreen Scrimmoge project is on hold currently due to the contractor having difficulties, but that will be brought back to the front page again.
And are the days of getting a road because your local TD was in a powerful ministerial role, are they gone?
Pretty much, yeah.
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 But it did happen, didn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, people joke about it, but it did.
No,
it did actually happen.
And I hate to tell you, it happens in America too, and it happens in other countries. Ireland's not unique.
Yeah.
People in political power, one thing that the constituency want is change or betterment for their environment. And whether it's a road or a new business park, whatever it is.
It happens.
That's democracy.
But that's in the past, we hope.
Yeah, that's definitely now that there's... See, what happened was is you had such a small envelope of money, and you were fighting over the scraps on the table years ago now. I'm going back to our time, you know, to the 80s and into the 90s. And once you had a funding envelope that was more than 5 years, you could then plan, prioritize, and then strategically draw up with engineers, with women and men who then have, there's a whole sort of governance process. There's less and less interference. And that's what's transformed the country.
Okay. Why has the Knockcrockery bypass been cancelled after years of planning? What a waste of money.
Yes, there's a lot of projects that are on hold due to funding. We have a funding envelope for 10 years, a limited amount in the first five, just over $1 billion. That money is currently allocated to the projects that are ongoing. And the back end funding starting in 2026 is really going to help take some of those projects off the drawing board and bring them back to the fore. But right now, it's just funding limitations.
And if we hit a recession, which could happen.
And that's the reality of it, Ray. You know, I'm not going to mix my metaphors.
No, because these long-term things are put, they're parked, aren't they?
They are, but it's important to have them on the shelf because you can always take them off when the money's there.
Please, Sean, when there will be public transport available in rural Ireland. I live near Strokestown, County Roscommon. My nearest hospital's in Sligo. There's no bus direct to Sligo, which is just over 1 hour drive. I can go via Charlestown. It takes 3 hours and includes a change that can sometimes not connect due to traffic. It's half an hour drive to the nearest rail station. No bus to there either, Drummond or Boyle. I can get a bus to Ballina or Dublin from town or the link bus to Roscommon, but not to Sligo or Galway, where the hospitals are from my area. I would love to be environmentally friendly, but I'm not able to go without a car. This is the same in most of rural Ireland, says Kay. And a point well made there, isn't it?
Yes. Well, again, I work with, you know, in partnership with the National Transport Authority. It's not directly, public transport is not directly under our remit, and the Department of Transport would oversee it. But to answer that question, you know, there is a lot of disparate requirements within the public transport network of Ireland. And as we were saying earlier, the transition to sustainable transport solutions is really where we need to go. And there is going to be layers to this, Ray. Mm. It's not going to happen overnight. And
but I suppose what was, when we started this conversation, it was encouraging in that there now is
things happening,
for want of a better phrase, joined up thinking around cycle lanes.
Yes.
But it, wouldn't it make sense that you would be able to get public transport from where you live to your hospital? Wouldn't
absolutely
that make sense?
Absolutely. And that's absolutely not up for negotiation on that. Just like the National Road Network, that's why it was established. It was established to connect ports, airports, hospitals and schools and basically major cities, major hubs. That was its whole purpose. So the public transport network obviously is built out at a need and demand logic. So thank you, man. And that's basically where it's going to have to end up. And it is. They do look at it. The National Transport Authority has some very good people in there, so they're going to come up with good solutions.
Right. Last time we spoke to you, you were telling us that we've more roads per something square mile than
per hectare
than any other country in Europe.
Yeah.
Right.
Rural, you know, because if you think
about
it.
Rural roads, of course.
Rural roads, the local Borains, that sort of thing.
I would like to know why various ads advise drivers to only use the two right-hand lanes for overtaking and then return to the left-hand lane. It would make more sense to drive at the maximum speed permitted in the two right-hand lanes, thereby preventing the speed merchants from causing deaths and serious injury. Eamon Martin, retired professional driver.
Well, I think he's, you want to be maximum driving on the right-hand side, which is what you're allowed to, and then go back into the
Yeah, he's traveling. saying he's sort of, if you had two people doing, say, 118 kilometres per hour in the two right-hand lanes, that would prevent people from doing 140 kilometres because they wouldn't be able to pass them.
That's correct. Yeah, yes. you're supposed to basically use the far right lane to pass out and then go back into the centre lane. And you don't want to use the far left lanes because one of them is an exit eventually.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
So you can't be zipping down that. So that's the reason.
Yeah, what Amy wants to know is why don't you encourage people to do that? But that's sort of...
Yeah.
Encouraging people to stop other drivers driving at the speed they want to do, even if it is beyond the speed limit.
Yeah. And I think the RSA does a great job of kind of really, and since they've come to the fore, they really have brought out the message of how we all need to take our own responsibility and be responsible for our own actions on the roads.
And there are less accidents on good roads.
Yes.
We know that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Which is a good result, you know.
Ask him when the airport hopper bus from Maynooth to Dublin Airport returns, please. Do you know that sort of
thing? I don't know. You'd have to go to the NTA on that one.
Right. What are they doing to fix the issues that are highlighted every day on traffic reports, i.e. Julianstown, Dunkettle interchange? Well, you're working on the Dunkettle.
Yeah, we're rebuilding the Dunkettle interchange. Yeah, yes, because, it's going well.
So do you just listen into the traffic reports and say, we better do something about that?
that's basically our planning. That's our entire planning process. Yes.
Could you please ask if we can have cycle lanes that go from where people live to local schools, shops and workplaces in rural Ireland? The greenways are nice for recreation or holidays, but are no use for daily use, which is where most of our joints are.
That's exactly what the National Cycleway Network is going to
and
be.
And you're only...
Literally just getting going. It's been officially announced a few weeks ago. We were asked to do it formally by the minister a couple of months ago, so we've had plenty of time to plan, get things rolling on it, and
this is new and exciting.
This is new stuff. This is very exciting and it's transformative. I know people are going to say hyperbole of the Boston guy, but basically it's going to be transformative
because there wasn't joined up thinking before this. There was no national plan.
And we had a hierarchy of needs. We had a hierarchy of needs, so that's the truth of it.
What's the name of that Kevin Costner movie, Build It and They Will Come?
Oh, yeah.
The Field of Dreams.
Good man.
See, exactly. I asked earlier on, but you were chatting away there. I'm fed up of being tailgated while driving in this country. People driving so close behind me that I can't see their number plates in my mirrors. Also, people hogging the middle lane. I believe both are contributing to the problem. Enforcement is not sufficient. Please raise this with your guests, says Martin in Kildare, who obviously uses the N7. So people driving too closely to cars.
Yeah. We have already the Gardaí, the RSA ourselves, but the Gardaí in particular, we have a new average speed camera, the first one of its type.
On the motorway network,
near Bird Hill on the M7.
So that'll act as a deterrent.
These sort of things will, and they change behaviour.
Now, nearly time to go time. Yep. There's loads of questions still there that we won't get to. Just on Eamon Ryan again, and everybody encouraging people to buy electric vehicles and drive them. They're too expensive. The network isn't there to charge them. What are you responsible for that?
We've been asked to develop out our road network as a conduit, for lack of a better pun, to help with the electrical infrastructure for charging cars. So if you can imagine, we could have park and ride facilities at interchanges. I know for a fact right now there's at Junction, is it in Carlow, the Carlow Junction on the M9, it looks like a car dealership because people pull off, park there, which is great. And then they team up with one car and all drive into Dublin or wherever they're going. That should become like a park and ride facility, for example, where you could charge your car for the day.
Right.
So that's our plan. We're going to build out the network within our roads network because it literally acts as a corridor to go, and because we can put power and systems, which AirGrid are responsible for with ESB, through our motorway network, if you will, and then use our service areas and then some park and ride facilities. We have a new one on the M1 that is up there. We're basically building it out and we're looking to get the electric.
Because people aren't going to dive until such time as
correct.
They feel that it's workable.
Yeah,
because
as long as the water's deep enough.
It seems to be all over the place at the moment.
Yeah.
There are various suppliers, various different connections.
You're absolutely right. And I think, you know, there's not a uniformity to it yet. There's, electric cars are expensive, and the infrastructure isn't quite there yet.
Right. So you've said it. We didn't get to half of them there. Will there ever be a railway system to Donegal? Final question for you.
I don't know is the honest answer.
You said yes there.
What did I?
In fairness, I'm not aware of that right now. Not that you're aware of. Okay. Bad news for Donegal. Sean O'Neill will be speaking again. Sean is the Director of Corporate Communications for Transport Infrastructure Ireland, who've recently become responsible for cycle lanes in the country, so at least we have somebody to talk to and you have somebody to direct your ire towards, and that is Sean O'Neill. Sean, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gurumaa Good Coit, thank you very much. We didn't get to a lot of your questions there today, and every time we have Sean O'Neill in, mind you, the last time was probably 5 years ago or 6 years ago, but everybody wants to know what's happening in their area. For example, why is Donegal once again being overlooked? Last time I looked, there was a fair bit of the west coast of Ireland that comprises Ireland's fourth largest county. We constantly feel left out in Donegal from all national development plans. Ireland's largest fishing and freight port is in Killybegs with a substandard road all the way through the county, says that person there. So, yeah, I always consider Donegal like Alaska. It's up there, and it's terrible that it's been ignored, and they're not getting the attention that they should. And any update on N81, Talat Blessington, somebody else asks. So we'll get Sean in again in 6 months or so and see what they're up to in the Transport Infrastructure Ireland. TII is what they call it. Yeah. Now it's time for our Reeling in the Ears quiz. And we've two quizzers standing by, ready to answer three questions on clips they will hear in their ears, bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And there is a prize. And today it's two nights stay at the Tullamore Court Hotel in one of their comfortable and spacious bedrooms. Dinner on one evening in the Brasserie. Loads of things to do. You can explore Ireland's hidden heartlands, play a game of golf in one of Offaly's top class courses, or even on one of Offaly's top class courses, or simply enjoy a pre-dinner tipple at the welcoming Furlong Bar. You can find out more at tullamorecourthotel.ie. tullamorecourthotel.ie. Hello, Orla. How are you?
Hello, how are things?
Good. Orla Palliser.
Palliser,
right.
Yes.
I'm sure people say Palliser all the time, do they?
Oh, we get all kinds of things, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And then what I was saying was, is there a T left out of that? Should that be Palliser?
No, it's not. Yeah.
And where does it come from, the name?
I think French origins, but via the UK to here.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. Orla Palliser.
Palliser, yes.
Yeah, has a nice ring to it. And you've just dropped Samuel Palliser to his music lesson.
Yes, to his French horn lesson, yes.
Oh, he plays French horn?
He plays the French horn,
wow.
Yes, he does, yeah.
So, that's a lovely sounding instrument.
It is now, yeah, he's playing it for years.
Yes. Why did he choose the French horn, tell me?
Well, my brother is a French horn player, so I think that probably had a bit of an influence on him
at
the time.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and he likes the sound of it as well, and the look of it, because it's quite fancy and shiny. And
it is, yeah. And does he play in an orchestra, or has he aspirations?
He actually had his first orchestra concert ever yesterday with the Junior Cork Youth Orchestra.
Brilliant.
So it was lovely to have.
Did that go?
It went fabulously, and it was very emotional to have back live music after so long.
Yeah.
It was really lovely to see. So.
And he's also he's a bit of a child prodigy. He's in the CBBC RTE show called Nova Jones.
He is, yes. He's playing a character called Kid Songwriter, who's a kind of an Elton John-like character.
Right. Okay.
So he beams in from space, sitting at a white baby grand piano, to solve Nova Jones's songwriting issues.
Right. And does he wear glasses in his
part? Oh, he wears glasses and a glitter cloak.
Oh, yes, so he is. He's fashioned on Elton John. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. He's very much fashioned on Elton John.
And he didn't lick it off a stone. What do? You're a freelance vocal coach and choir conductor.
Yes, I am. Yeah. So there's kind of music in all the family. So,
yes.
Yeah.
And what do the two older children, do they play musical instruments?
They don't play musical instruments anymore, but my eldest Matthew is doing a musical theatre degree in the Cork School of Music.
Uh-huh.
And Abby is in fifth year and hoping to head off to London to drama or dance college the year after next. So,
they'll be casting for Ryan Tuberty soon.
Well,
would Matthew fit the bill?
He just might.
He just might. You never know. You never know. Matthew Palliser as Ryan Tuberty. Okay. Right, so you're up against Niamh McCarthy. How are you doing, Niamh?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. And you're at home with how many children?
Three of them.
Right. And there was a big birthday yesterday?
No, on Sunday.
Oh, this Sunday?
Yeah.
Because that is a big birthday. It's double figures.
Yes. Double digits.
Yes. And does Harry appreciate that it's, a, you know, 9 to 10 is a big move?
No, he already thinks he's very grown up, right?
Oh, does he?
Yeah, he does.
Well, he is the eldest in the family, so that's probably something to do with it.
Yeah.
So there's Harry, who's 10 on Sunday, Max, who's 6, and Freya, who's 2.
Yes, yeah.
I love Freya. So what's the plan? What's the plan for Sunday for the celebrations?
Well, we're hoping the rain will stay away. And
yes,
we have a big bouncy castle, and nearly every child that knows them, I think, is coming at this stage.
To your house?
Yeah.
To your house?
Yes.
All
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
We did that once, never again.
Yeah. It was a great idea at the time.
Yeah. I would book, you know, some sort of first aid and some security. And Yeah. Have you lots of open spaces? Or yeah?
We do, yeah.
Yeah, you just shove them outside. That's the way to do it. Yeah,
that's
great.
I'm hoping the weather stays clear.
No, it's supposed to be. I was listening to the lady last night and she said next weekend again is going to be good. So there will be rain during the week. That's good, right. Okay, so it's Niamh takes on Orla. You know the rules by now. Three questions, three clips. If you go for a long clip, you get 1 point. And if you go for a shorter clip, it's more difficult. So you get 2 points for that. Whoever's the most points is the winner. And if it's a draw on points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both. Here we go. Okay, Orla, down in Carrigaline, your first question. Well, the year is 1993.
Okay.
Right, and the first question is on television programmes. So, how do you feel about that? Are you going to go long or short?
I think I'll go long for that.
Go long, okay. Yeah. Viewers got to see the supernatural drama for the first time in 1993. Can you name it? Here's your long clip.
Oh, isn't it nice to be suddenly so highly regarded? So who did you take off to get stuck with this detail, Scully?
Actually, I'm looking forward to working with you. I've heard a lot about you.
Oh, really? I was under the impression that you were sent to spy on me.
Well.
Is that the X-Files?
It is! Yeah, Scully and Mulder. And Scully was the giveaway there. You get 1 point. David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson as two FBI agents tasked with getting to the bottom of inexplicable events. Good start to Niamh.
Thank you.
1993, Niamh, on the television, would you like a long clip or a short clip?
I'll go shorter.
Short, okay. Now, we first saw this comedy spin-off set in Seattle in 1993. Can you name it? Here's your short clip.
I'm originally from Manchester, England.
Oh, really? Did you hear that there? I'm 3 feet away.
God, I haven't a clue, Ray.
No.
Seinfeld?
You're sort of in the right ballpark there, but Fraser. It was Fraser, yeah. Kelsey Grammer. And he, of course, appeared on Cheers, and then he had his spin-off there with Fraser.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Back to you, Orla. Music from 1993. Do you want a long clip or a short clip?
I'll go short.
Okay, this singer had a huge hit and topped the Irish charts for 6 weeks in 1993 with this song. Can you name the song or the singer? Here's your short clip.
Some days it don't come at all.
Is that Meatloaf?
Yes. 2 points. The name of the song. You don't have to give me the name of the song. It doesn't matter. But
is this, I Would Do Anything for Love?
Yeah, I won't give you a bonus point if you sing it.
No, thank you. No, I'll give that one right. A minute.
Right, so you're on three. Niamh, you've yet to score, so you sort of have to go short on this one, I think. Yes, you do.
Yeah, I have to go for it.
Yes, you do. 1993 music. This was number one for 5 weeks in the summer of that year. Can you name the song or the band? And here is your short clip.
Into a crisis, times when I'm lying in bed just to get it all out.
No, I can't.
No.
I was only two in 93.
Oh, well, yes, sorry. Yeah, it's all because that song probably is someone that's you know, some songs are played over and over again.
Yeah, no, I can't, really.
No, nothing. Probably that's probably the first time you heard it, really.
I've heard it, but I wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah, it's Four Non-Blondes and What's Up.
Yeah, no, What's I up? Definitely wouldn't have got
now,
it. No,
you can't catch Orla now at this stage.
Yeah. Congratulations, Orla.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Niamh. Thank you.
Niamh, you see, it was a bad year for you. You were only two.
Yeah,
so,
bad year.
So how would we expect you to remember? Well, we're going to send you out two Ray Darcy Show mugs. And
that's great. Thanks,
I hope
Ray.
The weather's good and the celebrations for Harry's double-digit birthday go brilliantly on Sunday. Thanks,
Niamh.
Thanks,
Niamh.
Mind yourself. Bye, bye, bye. Bye. Orla, well done. You are off to
Thank
Tullamore.
You so much.
Yes, and you can see what's
Thank
in store
you
for
so
you.
Much.
The Tullamore Court Hotel. And loads of things to do. They have a 20-metre pool. There's a kids' club there if you want to bring the kids. And you can go and explore Ireland's hidden heartlands or play golf or whatever. TullamoreCourtHotel.ie.
Thank you so much.
Well done,
can
Orla.
Can I be really cheeky and get a plug-in for something?
Go on.
Christmas in June in Waterford Arena
is being organised by a woman who lives very near Tullamore, Barbara Dowling, and it's going to have musicians from all over Ireland and beyond, 500 musicians in total, on the 26th of June in the Waterford Arena in Galway, raising money for Brain Tumour Ireland.
The Waterford Arena in Galway?
Sorry, the Waterford Arena in Waterford.
Yes,
the
sorry. I was listening. So the Waterford Arena in Waterford.
26th of June.
Okay.
Christmas in June for Barbara Dowling and
Done.
Brain Tumour Ireland.
Done.
Thank you so much.
Good cause too. Thanks, Orla. Well done again. See
Thank you.
Bye.
Very
bye.
Much.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Conor Pope joins us in studio. Good afternoon, Conor.
Hi, Ray.
Pricewatch@rte.ie if you want Conor's advice on any consumer type issues. What are you writing about today in the Irish Times?
Well, I've actually got two different reader problems. One is a problem associated with air, and a problem one of our readers had, and then another one is a problem with Three. Uh-huh. And it's a story that we've actually dealt with both on this show, and we've dealt with it on the pages of Price Watch in the past. Somebody's parent passed away and they were trying to disconnect them,
yes,
or cancel the account, and then it just became hugely problematic. And I suppose it's again more evidence that more can be done with the communications companies to improve their communications. Now, I guess they have improved. Like, there was a, you know, and I guess that, you know, maybe in now that we're moving out of the pandemic period and people are maybe, they have more staff and the staff are maybe working closer together, that hopefully you'd imagine the problems will lift. But it's still unacceptable.
With all the talk, we've done it here, you've done it in the paper, they've done it on Liveline, I've heard on other shows, that they would have some sort of system in place on their website or whatever, that when you go about tying up the loose ends after you lose a parent, that would be there, available to you and easily accessible.
Do you know, the one thing that's lacking across the entire sector, I think, is the word empowerment. And I don't think any of these companies sufficiently empower their staff to do the right thing. And that's not because the staff are programmed to do the wrong thing, or that's not because anybody who works in any of these companies wants to cause unnecessary distress or hardship to anybody. Nobody wants to do that. But I think there's a real problem with empowering staff. And I always think about a story I heard about an insurance company in the UK, and this is going back 10 or 12 years, and they decided they would set aside a budget to empower their frontline customer care workers to do the right thing. Now, they didn't say what the right thing was, but they said, you have a small budget and you can use this small budget to do the right thing when it comes to dealing with customers. And the story that always comes to mind is, there was an insurance company. So this very distressed customer rang the company to say that she'd been in a minor tip in her car, and she went to find her insurance premium, her insurance disc, and she'd found out that her toddler had scribbled all over it, rendering it illegible. So the woman who happened to be a woman who was on the other end of the phone working for the insurance company said, she took all her details and said, don't worry about that, we'll send out your new disc in the post, and we'll send out a letter, and you'll be grand. And she then went off and she used a tiny percentage of her discretionary spend to buy a box of crayons, which she put into the package and sent that along with the insurance disc for the toddler. And that kind of small gesture.
You're talking about it now. And
I'm not identifying the insurance company, but that kind of small gesture, it's a really human thing. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that's lacking from all customer care that's done over the telephone, and indeed a lot of customer care that's done face to face, is that human interaction. Mm. That it's one human being dealing with another human being. And that's particularly pronounced when you're dealing with someone who suffered a bereavement. Because when somebody has suffered a bereavement, what they're looking for, in addition to you resolving their problem, is just a little bit of compassion, a little bit of, listen, we've all been in your position. It's a horrible position to be in. Let me do whatever I can to make that problem better for you.
Okay, so that's in the Irish Times today or online. Now, this came in, pricewatch.rte. Dear Conor, I'm a big fan of Aldi and Lidl. Probably more Aldi. I'm especially a big fan of Aldi's 650-gram soft batch bread, which retailed at 99 cent and now costs 109 cent. Still great value, except the two heels of the loaf are quite thick and weigh in at 160 grams. Could that be right? Yes, which works out at 26% of its net weight. It's not easy to cut the heels with a serrated bread knife when you're 75 years of age and have arthritic fingers. I approached Aldi regarding the foregoing on two occasions, the first being over 12 months ago and the second in the last 4 months, but nothing has been done. The solution seems simple enough. Adjust the slicing machine. Could you intervene and help to sort it out? I would hate to have to stop buying the bread. That's great.
And actually, this kind of left off the page at me because, like, I don't know about you, Ray, but I would reach instinctively for the heel of a sliced pan first.
I'm not a heel man myself.
Love a good heel.
Right, okay.
and like, whereas my wife will never eat the heel of bread. Right. And she actually has great fond memories of her dad, who would very carefully use a, you know, one of these kind of serrated knife to cut the heel in half. So she'd have a proper slice.
Yes,
but
yes.
I love the heel of a sliced pan. Okay. So I was reading it going, no, he'd be grand. But you know, again, I appreciate it. It takes all sorts. And there's a lot of people out there who don't like the heel of bread. And the percentage, 26% of the loaf being heel, did seem like
that's
a lot.
That's over a quarter of it.
So I went off this morning and I went down to Aldi, my local Aldi, and I bought the bread in question. And I brought it home. And
which is the 650 gram soft batch.
Yeah, yes. And my whole plan was to bring in the heels and we could have a look at the heels. But then in between times, I had some toast. Nice bread, I have to say. I'm not going to lie to you. And then I weighed the heels.
Right.
Now, the heels I got were much thinner, much more slender than the ones that our listeners talking about, which tells me that there isn't a uniformity of the size of the heel of this loaf of bread.
Yeah.
So it's in many respects, the solution to the problem would be for him to root around on the shelf and kind of, you can, it's a kind of one of these cellophane wrappers. So you could get a sense of whether or not you're getting one with a thick heel or a non-thick heel. So, but like that, long term, maybe that isn't the solution. But then, so then I went off and I weighed them. And as I say, they were much lighter than they were nowhere near 26% of the loaf. But they were like maybe a good 10% or 12%. So in effect, he's wasting, like for him, he would be wasting 10 or 12% of his loaf because he doesn't like the heels. I also got in touch with Aldi to see if there's anything they could do. Now I can understand that if you're a customer in any shop and you go up to the guy in the shop and say, any chance you could do anything about the heel of your bread? Chances are nothing's going to happen. I mean, what are they going to do?
I think you're right there. I think
you know the fact that
empowerment.
even where we talked about empowerment, that would be taking it a step far. So I can appreciate why probably nothing got done. But then you know the weight of the Ray Darcy Show contacting Aldi. You know, I expected them to swing into action, recalibrate their machines, and suddenly everything would be done and dusted. That didn't happen. No, but what they did say, they said that they sent me a lengthy statement. So they didn't dismiss it out of hand, and they didn't just say, no, come on, cop on, we're not going to do that. So they explained that the Ballymore crust soft batch is baked according to a traditional Irish recipe by a supplier called O'Hara's in Foxford County, Mayo.
Yes.
And this is something that I didn't know, because when I was a kid, batch bread was always really exotic. So I grew up in the west of Ireland and in Cork, and you didn't have batch bread in Cork and Galway, but you did have it in Dublin. And batch bread was always this wonderfully exotic thing in my childhood. But it's baked in a specialised oven and has a longer bake time than a normal sliced pan. And that results in a different shape and crust. Didn't know that.
There's a bigger crust.
There's a bigger, thicker crust because it's baked for a longer time. Yeah. And apparently this particular bread that our listener's talking about is one of its most popular fresh breads. And their market research suggests that people are more like me than you and they like the thick heel. And the product is actually designed that way.
Uh-huh.
So it wouldn't be a question that they would entirely recalibrate their machines because they're actually calibrated to give the thick heel because that's what people want.
Bad news for our listener.
They're also, then the statement continued, we're also open to customer feedback and they review all their groceries regularly. So then they went on and they said where they get all their bread from and blah, blah, blah. And they said, and this is an interesting, never fear, if you're a customer who does not enjoy a thick-heeled batch, we recommend trying our specially selected ancient grain sourdough batch where they've removed one of the heels entirely.
Right.
And this particular product is produced by another small bakery called Toomey's. And what they've also agreed to do, totally unsolicited, I didn't say that they should do this, they're going to send down a specially selected tray of different breads to our customer, to our listener, to see, and this is their funny pun, to heal any wounds. So they will send down a range of different options. But the bottom line is, and I think this was a big ask.
Yes, I'm desperately trying to, I'm listening to you there, but I'm desperately trying to remember if there anybody in my family had a preference for the heel of the bread. I don't think they did. I don't think
that must have created a bit of a crisis.
Yeah, like, and if you got a thick heel, you would be doing that thing, which is difficult to do, even if you're not 75,
yeah,
is to try and, you know, get in the middle there and create another slice of bread out of the heel. But that's what this man is saying.
No, absolutely. Yes. And the thing is, when I was talking to Niamh outside, and I was like, I loved the heel, as I said. Yeah. And every single photograph, and I'm not joking, every single photograph of me as a child, and I say from the age of about one till maybe seven, has me eating a heel of bread. Every single one of them.
Let's brought back a memory. That's where the heels went.
The babies.
The babies. That's it exactly. Now you.
There you go.
That's the memory. Yeah.
And of course, I grew up at a time when taking photographs was a very expensive business. Yeah. So your parents didn't waste film on you, like you know, they wasted it on mountains and any kind of random touristy scene. But every single photograph of me as a child is me eating a heel of bread.
Now here's there was a bit of shrinkflation there, wasn't there? 99. So that's just
that the
was,
price no, has
that
gone
was,
up.
That was just inflation, not shrinkflation. But it was 2.29 per pound a few months ago. Now it's 2.99 euro. Explain.
Actually, funnily enough, that's one of the things that a lot of listeners to the Irish Times have got in touch with us about. Butter has gone up dramatically. It was 2.29, and this is the own brand butter because the Kerrygold butter is priced differently. I think the Kerrygold butter is 3.75,
right.
Whereas the own brand butter went from 2.29 to 2.49 to 2.89, and now it's 2.99. And the irritating thing for, I think, a lot of consumers is that all of the retailers engage in price matching. So if one retailer charges X for a product, then all retailers will charge.
But is that not a good thing? Why is that a bad thing?
It's a good thing when prices are low.
Right.
But when prices start to creep up, then the price match.
But surely it finds its level at the lowest.
You'd think. But what we've seen is that the product, let's say if four supermarkets all had butter priced at 2.49.
Yes.
And then one of them, because of the spike in inflation and because of higher transport costs, energy costs and all the rest, they increase their prices to 2.89. All of the others then have that comfort of increasing their prices to 2.89 as well. And it's probably because they have no choice because of all of the different incremental increases up and down the supply chain. And maybe that's what's happening. But it does mean that you can't shop around. So you can't say, OK, well, supermarket X is now charging 2.99 for butter. So I'm going to go to supermarket Y where it's still 2.49. The reality is that if supermarket X starts charging at supermarket Y, it'll start charging it as well.
The heel was a must. We had to bags it, says Ed. Well, the only thing that was bags in our house was the cream at the top of the milk. We used to bags the cream.
It's funny, I was only talking about the cream at the top of the milk yesterday. I was at an event in Airfield Estate and it was one of these kind of social enterprise gatherings. So all these various different social enterprises had come together. And I think social enterprises are a brilliant thing, by the way, but that's a story for another day. And I was talking about the Airfield milk. Now, I have no connection with Airfield whatsoever, but they do produce their own organic milk from the farm. And it's exactly that. It's the big, thick lump of cream
at the top.
And I think it's brilliant. All of that. No, but I gave it to my children and they were like, what the hell is this stuff floating in my cereal? And I'm like, lads, it's cream. Like, it's a good thing.
Why doesn't the man cut the heel into five or six fingers? Much easier and safer to cut, says Johnny.
I will get in touch with them and suggest that maybe. But it might be the thickness that he doesn't like.
And on the phone companies, I found Gomo. That's a phone company, is it?
It is.
Brilliant when I had to notify them of my mum's death last year. Not only were they so efficient and made the process very easy, but they actually sympathised with me. I was very impressed.
I wouldn't expect anything else. That's the very least that somebody should do when you tell them about a bereavement.
Why is loo paper doubled in price? Liz wants to know.
I was going to say something rude there, and I'm glad I didn't. I don't know why it's doubled in price, but I tell you that like the production cost associated with making toilet roll is probably quite high because they've got to pulp the paper. Probably a very energy sapping process.
Can I ask you, do people use an opportunity like this just to put up the prices?
I'd be very surprised if they did right now because there's so much attention on prices and people are far more price sensitive now than they would have been even 6 months ago.
No, but you don't have to give anybody an explanation as to why the price has gone up. People are just taking that it's right across the board.
Do you know what? It probably is happening. Yeah. And I'd love to be able to pin it down because I think the people who are exploiting a situation to maximise their profits
should be named and shamed.
Should be named and shamed because they're not doing themselves any favours, but more importantly, they're ripping off their consumers in a way that's entirely unnecessary.
It's very difficult to prove.
Very difficult to prove.
And you know that from doing numerous consumer shows on the television.
Absolutely. But if the if your listeners have examples of what they think are suspicious price increases, I'd love to hear about them.
ray@rte.ie. Final word to Mick in the Hatch. The heel of the plain loaf was always reserved for me in our house. Cut an inch thick with thick cheese both heels made a 2.5-inch sambo.
I like the sound of that. I have to tell you.
Well, you have your all heels gone now, or you?
I ate both heels before I came in. Right. Oh no, I forgot them. They're still at home. I'll eat them when I get
home. Watch at RTE.ie if you want Connor to grapple with any of your consumer issues. That's it from us and Connor. Sarah and Cormac are on the way on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.